I'd be faking it now. Is it ready? You know that thing you try and repeat? When, have you ever tried that, to repeat something that... Did you ever succeed? Really getting it on the button? I want to try again. Right, where was I? Without love, our passion and our dispassion are no good. So tonight I want to look at a theme about love. And the theme is called Two Loves. Two Loves. So I have a proposition for you. That human beings, just see what happens to your heart when I say this. You can disagree, but wait till you hear till I get through it. Human beings love life. Not necessarily every morning or every day. But you often find when we're pushed, if we knew it was our last day here in this realm as one of these, when somebody knows they don't have long to live, suddenly those, very often those simple things, suddenly are seen in a preciousness as precious beyond price, knowing that we won't know it forever. Sometimes we don't recognize that we love life because it can be frustrating and difficult, and we can feel hindered and keep banging in to those things that are in my way of what I want to achieve, or I feel hindered internally with the world of things and I get frustrated or disappointed, and it's like the world of things. Yes, yes, I appreciate it, but it's really frustrating at times. But I propose that human beings love life. And even if you're sitting there thinking, no, I don't, I propose that the fact that you care enough about your well-being to come here, and that you want nourishment and well-being, comes when we learn how to really track it contemplatively. This comes out of care and love. We may not recognize the presence of that love. We may see ourselves in the activity of the searching for the nourishment, for the well-being, for the insight, for the... We may not think of it always as love. It might feel like desperation. But if we keep practicing and tracking, we will come to see too that the source of that search is love. Human beings, I propose, whether we recognize it or not, love life. Those small things, taking a shower, if you knew it was the last time. You know, and in a way, because I'm going home tomorrow, this is my last time. I'm a little bit more got that reflection of such a snowy place. Like some of you might think, oh, snowy place. Tell me something about snowy place. But, you know, if it was the last time, you knew that you had to put your foot and go crunch, like the first time you did it, when you were super excited, when you learned to take that step, in your probably in your Finnish overalls, all wrapped up, all being well. And you go crunch. And I already feel that I'm going home tomorrow and I haven't crunched enough. I want to crunch more before I go. I want to look at that lake more. and see that ice hole where bold people jump in at night. I want to look at it some more. When I let myself know that I go home tomorrow, I want to see at least one more person get in there. And we love the things that are familiar, even if sometimes we hate them. And I propose that human beings have another love that draws our attention, draws our heart, draws our soul, draws us, pulls us sometimes magnetically. And that is the love for what lies beyond what is familiar. The love for what lies beyond our familiar conception of the world. What appears to us less limited or limiting. That if we start to practice, we get a taste for that. And if we ever come back more than once, something about that, something of being beyond limit and hindrance calls us this inner freedom, this inner adventure, this inner exploration of what can be known. I propose that we love what is unfamiliar and calls us beyond. And I'm proposing, as we start this discussion, or not really a discussion, is it? It's a talk. That these are very often for us two loves. Even if intellectually we know they cannot be two loves, surely it's all the same love. Even if we have glimpsed for ourselves no knowledges, depths of knowledges of onenesses, different kinds of oneness that we can touch as a human being, but maybe also in our practice. Even if intellectually we know they cannot be two loves, often emotionally we can experience it as two loves. And I propose that until we embody and let our realization of whatever degree of realization that we discover in our practice or that we have known, to the extent that we have not yet embodied that through the fabric of our cells, in the spaces between the organs, in the unfathomable mystery of our body and heart. To the extent that we haven't done that, and I propose that that's endless, that possibility, then we will experience these as two loves. Even if our head would be saying, no, it can't be. And how does this, might this show up? And see if this is true for you or not. How this might show up is that let's say we're all drawn to being in silence, clearly. Come to retreat, or we're out in nature, or we're on our own. And we might touch a depth of authenticity or unhinderedness. Not perfectly unhindered, not that no issues arise, of course they do, but we get that pull, that magnetic pull, and that kind of, I want to know more about that. I love that. I love the authenticity I know about myself, the silence, the depth of feeling close and intimate with myself and the world. I love that. I love the beyonds that pull me deeper. The new ways of conceiving, of perceiving, of even through the pain, and not excluding the pain. And we love that, or else you wouldn't have come back. Something, I mean, you might also hate the work that it takes sometimes, but we're pulled. And then we'll do this for a bit, and they'll go, and then something in us will go, yeah, but it doesn't feel right to leave the world out of this. That's just not right. That world of relationships and limits, genuine limits. You know, having a body is a limit. Even if you've got one that works really well, it's a limit. Certain agreements we have in relationships are limits. There are limits that allow us to make things. So we love this unhinderedness, but then after a while we go, yeah, but I wanna go and have tea with what's his name? And I wanna explore that thing. And how do I relate to the urgencies of our world that call us to take a stand, to say no, or to say yes. And so we leave the retreat and we go and have tea with such and such and hang out in that relationship and we might love it. And we take our stand and we respond to the urgencies of the world that call us personal, collective, social, environmental. And we do that and we love it and we feel good about doing it at times, and sometimes it's difficult. And then something in us goes, yeah, but there's more to that kind of mysterious beyond stuff. I want a bit more of that now. I'd better go back on retreat or go to the forest and world can wait for me for a bit. These are really good things I'm doing. Great relationships. Well, you know, for the most part. Yeah, they have their issues, of course. And then I want to know that. So I go to retreat again. Oh, yeah, that's good. Whew. Oh, yeah, I love you. I love you, whoever you are, that calls me deeper and beyond. And right? And it can be, it's not like we're flip-flopping. It might be, we might really experience it as two worlds, and some of us may have and felt the pain of that. Can't leave the world aside. That would be, we can't. And actually, we love it. We love it enough to wonder about this question. We love it enough because we have the relationships, because we see what calls us and what may need us, even. So what do we do about this? Maybe it's not an issue for you. But if you relate to it at all, let's think. Because what can happen in those engagements where we have genuine limits to what's possible, we can long for and yearn for the authenticity, for the depth, for the unhinderedness, for the clarity, for the lightness, for the flexibility of being able to move with things where it wasn't so clunky and thick. Yes, it is very often on the cushion, but at times we know that it isn't, and that calls us beyond. And we long for that same authenticity, clarity, depth, play, malleability in the world of limits. So how are we going to resolve that? Whatever degree of realization, you don't have to be like a perfect meditator or master. If you've stayed here on this week, you've stayed here long enough to know something of what I'm talking about. Often, many of us have had to be on our own to know this kind of beyondness that calls, and feel like we can do justice to this. We might experience that when we're with others, we might really love them, but something in us might start to adapt a little bit or lose something of the intimacy with ourselves or something of the spark that where we know our aliveness. That we might shape ourselves a little different or feel bereft when we do shape ourselves to kind of fit in, or we're so sick of trying to shape ourselves to fit in, we try not to fit in, but that's another kind of shaping to, right. How to reconcile this and really take our place in the world. There's a bridge. There's a bridge and there's a path. and the path goes via your mindfulness of body. Your mindfulness of the pain of where they may feel like a division. I want to know that rub. If there's no rub, then there's no question. And it goes via the presence of your love for each of these domains. My love for the world and the familiar things, and my love for the unlimited, the unhindered, what calls me beyond. To be able to recognize the presence of love for each of these domains is a particular art that I wouldn't underestimate the practice that it may take to know this. It's totally possible and you will know it, but to really let that season in such a way that this reconciliation happens. We can know love in many ways. We can know love through intention, and that's the bottom line. Absolutely the bottom line is that our intention is to act from love. We may not feel love, we might even hate the person in a minute, but we know our action wants to be born of that intention, born of love. There's a really lovely story. One of my teachers in a different lineage, I think this story fits here. It just popped up in my mind. We'll try it out, you let me know. And she's really lovely woman. And someone said to her, when did you know you could marry that bloke? Like, you know, it's a big deal to marry somebody. Like, what let you know that you could do that? When you sort of do that, you're basically kind of limiting yourself, at least for a while, right? Isn't that the deal? I mean, limits aren't bad. You can grow things in limits. To grow anything, you need a limit around it, right? And she said, he was the loveliest man I've ever hated. Right? So she wasn't under the illusion that she's going to just love him forever. She can love him, she can have the intention of love, but she knows that sometimes she's not. Right? Did that fit there? What was the point?
The earlier point, that it connected to.
Can't remember, hopefully we'll find out. Maybe somebody else knows. Yeah, it did, but I can't think how. All right, we can know love through intention, right? So you can have the intention to love even if what arises is terrible. And we have that in our practice here, right? We can have all kinds of content move through, and we see the struggle of becoming the content, identifying with the content. We get some room, we get some samatha, we can disidentify a little bit, we can see what's here, and we can intend to love. Doesn't mean we succeed, but we can intend to love whatever the content is. So we can know love through intention. We can know love through action. We can act out of love even if we're not feeling it in that moment. That's actually wisdom. So you don't have to wait till you feel loving. Some of us might have been waiting years. Right? There are ways we can know love. But we can also know love through the presence of love. And this is something I want to point to, because this is where the bridge will start to come clearer. So let's look at these two loves, this proposal of two loves, and I'm going to call out a question, and you don't have to answer, but later I might call it out and see if anyone wants to. If I was to ask you, tell me something that you love about life, and by life here I'm meaning what appears limited, what appears familiar, what appears that way. Tell me something you love about life. And if I was to ask you to say that, and you could say, I love, it doesn't mean you always do or you always feel it, but I love, actually, I actually also really love going crunch. Right? And I would get you to say that. Or whatever. I love my child. I really love whatever it is. Have you got one? I want you to get one. You don't have to say it out loud. And take a moment, tell me something you love about life, that if you knew you would die, that you would really like to do one more time, or 10 more times. And just breathe. Breathe right there in the middle of your chest. And I would ask you, what are you sensing in your chest as you say that? Breathe, breathe up there and let yourself sense from the inside. Imagine you're saying it out loud or you're doing that for the last time, that thing. And yes, it might be mixed with grief, because grief comes about because we love. But see if you can tune to the love. And I would ask you, what are you sensing? What are you noticing? What is there that is has a substance that is not only the emotion, is not only the intention, is not only the image? What is arising in your chest? And I would ask you then, tell me something you love about inner adventures. And you might not call it adventures, you might call it finding out or meditation or working really hard with my stuff. But what is it you love? What is it you love about that? And I would ask you that. And I would wait for you to find out and say it out loud. I love. I love it when it all goes really dark and quiet inside. I love it when I hear a kind of mysterious pull that I have no name for. I love it when something in me that seemed so real and solid and who I was, I suddenly realize, oh, that's not me. And I could bow with gratitude or jump up and down with. Even if it seems like of course. And I would ask you, can you feel your love for that thing? And where do you feel it right now? Sense your body, sense into your chest. Palpate that area of your heart and the fabric through your lungs and behind your ribs and all around there. Touch it with your attention. Palpate it like a cat palpates on the rug or on the sofa. And what is the substance of that love? Can you sense it? We can practice tracing the love for both via the presence of love, via the substantial, touchable, feelable. Wouldn't call it necessarily an emotion as such, I mean I might, but a presence. Via the presence of love and coming into where those two roads that veered so far away for some of us from each other, tracing them back, right back through the intention, through the action, back through the presence and right deep into the well of that up thrusting of this unstoppable dynamic life. Right back to connect what seems like my own little human heart, connecting that right to the, as they say in gold prospecting circles, so I believe, the mother lode. Is that where that word comes from? The mother lode. You don't know that expression. Let's put it in Dharma language. Tracing that presence of the love right back to its root, in the boundless heart that is not mine, not yours, but can be known. Right, back to the boundless heart that does not make that division between the world that appears limited and has limits, and the world that has none. We all recognize the presence of love. If you think you're far away from it, you're not. You all know when love is present or not in a space. You know if you go into a room where there's just been an argument and they finished a minute before you got in there, you kind of know it, right? The two people there, you can tell they're not standing in the presence of love together, right? We're sensitive to that. We feel it. We may not recognize it, but we know it. So here we want to go from the knowing to the recognizing, to the sensing, to the tracking, to the following that right back into the boundless dimension. Because as you can see from this image, these two worlds not only meet, it's in a way, it's prior to them dividing, you could say. We're sensitive to this love. We know when it's absent, we know when it's present. It's completely essential. It's essential for babies. You will all have had enough love to have got this far, however difficult it was. It's essential. That love, that possibility, it makes our brains grow, it does all kinds of magic things. It makes us. We know it, we're sensitive to it. So what is the presence of love like? And these aren't going to be new ideas to you, but we can go further with it. Because where we can go is not just when we walk into a room and we know if the presence of love is there or not, or not just when we see it in another. You know, when we think, oh, that one really seems very, very loving, and we can kind of see it over there. Great, that's beautiful. But also and that can be inspiring and et cetera, but also to be able to recognize the presence of love through knowing it, through being it. Not just knowing it by being able to say, oh, it's there, where we can point and see it from that perspective, but knowing it right from the inside, where there's not a perspective. We can't point to it. I mean, you might be able to point to it, but you're knowing it more directly from the inside out. Right? So what is the presence of love like as a phenomenon? I could ask you, what is the presence of love like? The presence, the substantive, substantial quality. Often there can be a warmth. And that warmth can be sensed, and it can be hot, and it can be very subtle. It can be very tender. Love can be very tender. It can be very juicy. Can have like, and juicy isn't just a descriptor. Juicy, you can feel something juicy, like if you were a strawberry or something. Once I asked this, maybe you were there, Lena, I asked this question in Sweden, something I asked in a meditation, what's the quality of your heart like right now? And I was expecting it in those Buddhist terms, contracted, expanded, full of aversion, full of this, that, or the other. And this lovely young man, Torkel, he said, and he was really sincere, I'm sure he wouldn't mind if I said this, and he really was sensing, and really sensing, and he said, strawberries. Were you there? And it's like, yeah, he's right, I can really see that. It's really juicy. Sometimes it's really juicy. Sometimes it's ablaze. Sometimes it has a kind of light touch to it. Sometimes the presence of love has a kind of dark, rich, velvety, endless, touchable presence like velvet in it. So to know this bridge of whatever degree of spiritual and worldly divide may be operative for us. To know that the presence of a love arises in this location, the one that's called you. Even when we're not recognizing it, it may just mean that it's covered over, that our gaze is going somewhere else, that the intimacy with our fabric of this location has just got a little further to go that day. This, to know that the presence of love arises in this location. When we can taste it, we can taste its sweetness at times, feel its softness, feel the strength and the vividness of it at times. And we know when we're in the presence of love, whether it's the other one's love or our own or somehow sensed in some way, we're less, you know how it is, we're less defended. Our path unfolds more easily. It's something like in that field of love, things can move more easily, we're less defended. Some of us, remember I mentioned at the beginning, some of us hating love and benevolence. I mean, all of us probably secretly really, really want it. But sometimes because the presence of love melts us and softens us, sometimes we can be ambivalent about that, even arising and knowing it in ourselves. So we make room for that as well. I remember I was at a temple opening in England in a Buddhist temple they'd built in 1999, 20 years ago, gosh. And it was in Britain, but they had invited, because it was a very big central temple, they'd invited all the grand monks and nuns, mostly monks, but grand monks and nuns from like Thailand to come and be part of that, maybe Cambodia. And there was this one monk, and I think later I found out he was a famous one, I can't remember, but he was sitting there at the end of the ceremony, and I saw his face, and he wasn't looking at me. I think he was just like, I sensed his sort of sparkly kindness, in a way. And despite myself, because my self-identity wasn't that I needed to go and see him. Like, what do I want to go and see him for? Right? And that's my kind of urban hard shell that I had, softening slowly over the years. And I could feel, despite myself, my body starts to be drawn towards him. It's like, hey, where we going? I'm not going to go and see any of you. And my body's like, I was just like super attracted to go and go closer to him. And that wasn't my style. I like to think of myself as very independent, not needy, not dependent on other people. Certainly not going to bow before a bloke, let alone an old bloke, let alone a... but I was... drawn, and what I saw was, as I was trying to kind of take myself away again, and I was drawn, my heart started to become liquid, you know, like the tears started to come and the melting, and that was a bit I didn't want to happen, right, from my ego sense. I didn't want to melt in a temple in England. And it's like, oh, that's interesting. I think I could get about like 5 meters away before it's like, is this enough? Yes, this is enough, I think. It's about as much as I can handle right now. Bowing from afar. Scuttling. Scuttling out. Cynical mind. He's just a bloke. Heart. When we're plugged into the presence of love, we might melt. But the heart can rest. We can sense it's in the trajectory of resting and feeling okay. And okay enough to be with what's difficult. Right? doesn't mean there's no suffering in the world. There is. But something about plugging into that root in the boundless heart that's not me or mine, but can be known at that cusp. It can be known in many ways, actually, but at that cusp where me meets what's more than me. And sometimes that me dissolves. That's beautiful. Sometimes there's me meeting the more than me. And right there, it's okay. Whatever is the suffering that arises internally and even externally, we sense that possibility. The valve for, if I think of it like this, my human heart, I can think of it lots of ways. And the valve, you know, like, is that the same word? Probably not. Is it a strange word? You know, it's like an engineering thing. She says, realizing she's out of her territory.
It's fine.
It's good. You know, everyone knows what a valve is. So the valve between my human heart and this boundless heart, we have access to the valve, and it can switch on and off. And sometimes what switches off the valve that connects us to the mother lode, to the rooted in the boundless heart, can be certain kinds of ideas, certain kinds of views about ourselves, like the one examples I just gave. I'm going to be too vulnerable. That's not a good idea. I won't be able to hold it together. I don't want to be undefended. I'll become brokenhearted. I'll open and then I'll be left on my own. Or just a no. I don't even know why I say no, but just no. I used to be in a choir. I just found the little brochure. It was in my papers today. I hadn't looked at it for ages. The choir was called Glorious Chorus, near where I live. And the woman writes really beautiful songs, the choir lady. And she has a song called, it's called Stronger, actually. But in the chorus, it starts to build, you know, the music starts to build. And she says, we'll leave as we came, stripped bare of all gain, with only our love to remember. We'll leave as we came into this world, naked, vulnerable, helpless, on one level, dependent on everything. We'll leave as we came, stripped bare of all gain, everything I've accrued, including my clothes, naked, with only our love to remember. So with our practice and with discernment, we can learn to bathe in the presence of love. And for some of us, it may be a while before we touch that. Don't give up. Some of you will know it very well. Some of us, the heart is the last place to come online. But it will. And we can bathe. And we'll forget. And we can bathe and we can learn what views, what self-images are in the way of resting, in that, what practices support resting in that, to be able to linger, vichara, linger, to bathe, to be nourished. It's very nourishing and allows us to have less of that hungry grasping towards the world, as we learn how to be nourished in our own location, soothed, healed, saturated, drinking. Explore the presence of love. This is the bridge, the home where the two worlds meet. And as one of my teachers says, presence of love. Presence, the substantial, tangible, touchable. Presence of love is our realization, whatever degree of realization there is. It is our realization liquefied. It's our realization turned into liquid, in form. In the presence, we melt, we soften like a sweet, like one of those sweets with a soft center, liquid center, naturally generous, available. This is our natural condition, more natural to us than our shapes that we wear around often to, I don't know, why do you wear the shapes of personality around that soft center? Because being undefended and naked doesn't always seem like a good idea. And we don't have to, like, blast ourselves open, not at all, that's not what I'm saying. This has a real care and sensitivity with it. Because that's the other aspect of love. It can be very gentle. Very, very gentle. And very strong. Tell us something you love about the world. You don't have to do that right now. And what are you noticing as you say that? Can you linger there? And what do you love about inner adventures and spiritual freedom, to whatever degree you've touched that? What do you love about it? And what are you sensing as you say that? Can you touch that? And can you linger there? And can you follow those two roads back to the liquid center? That is not you or yours. It is not me or mine. If we cling, it's suffering. With earth below and sky above, can we learn to see not only with our eyes, but right from the depth of the boundless heart. I want to finish with a poem. I was going to say, maybe we just get a translation of a couple of the English words in case you don't know them, only because they're quite unusual in English also. Might be the same. Romanesque. Same? Like an architectural.
Romanine.
Yeah. Yes, did you hear her? What was it?
Romanine.
Ah, very similar. Vault. VAULT. Same word in Swedish?
Holby.
Ah. So in the architectural thing in a church or a cathedral, a vault. They like that, aren't they? Yeah. Okay. I think they're the strangest words. And piazza. I mean, that's Italian, right? It's probably the same. Okay. So this is from one of your Nordic brothers, from Thomas Tranströmer. Inside the huge Romanesque church, the tourists jostled in half darkness. Vault opened behind vault, disappearing behind each other. No complete view. A few candle flames flickered, and an angel with no face embraced me and whispered through my whole body, "Don't be ashamed of being human. Be proud. Inside you, vault opens behind vault, endlessly. You will never be complete, but that's how it's meant to be." Blind with tears, I was pushed out into the fiercely sun-drenched piazza, together with Mr. and Mrs. Jones, Mr. Tanaka and Signora Sabatini. And inside them all, vault opened behind vault, endlessly. Breathing and sensing your whole body, seeing your love of the world and your love of unhindered freedom. And come with him once more into the church. Inside the huge Romanesque church, the tourists jostled in the half-darkness. Vault opened behind vault, disappearing behind each other. No complete view. An angel with no face embraced me and whispered through my whole body, "Don't be ashamed of being human. Be proud. Inside you, vault opens behind vault, endlessly. You will never be complete. That's how it's meant to be." Blind with tears, I was pushed out on the fiercely sun-drenched piazza, together with Mr. and Mrs. Jones, Mr. Tanaka and Signora Sabatini. And inside them all, vault opened behind vault, endlessly. Let's sit together for a minute.